Welcome into ESPN FC. Shaka Hislop, Sebastian Salazar here with you. Shaka, lots to get to today. Reports that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer could be close to a contract extension at Manchester United. But let's start with the big news of the day. Actually, as reported by ESPN, Borussia Dortmund have set Erling Haaland's transfer fee for this summer, Shaka, at 180 million euros. Here to help us put that in perspective, we've got Stuart Robson, Don Hutchison, and Ian Dark. Ian, I'll start with you. It's a big number. What kind of message do you think Dortmund are sending here? Not that just to clubs that might be interested in Haaland, but to the player himself.
Well, I think it's shades of the Jadon Sancho story from last summer when Manchester United thought they were going to get their man and Borussia Dortmund kept holding out for the figure that they wanted. I think they're sending out a message again here that they don't really want to sell him unless somebody is going to break the bank. Well, interestingly, there might be a couple of clubs, even in this COVID crisis, who would break the bank. And two of them, I think, are in England, Chelsea and Manchester City, who could afford to do it. I mean, the kid is dynamite. He's rewriting the record books. He's a fantastic player. He could change the fortunes of almost any club that he signed for. So maybe somebody will think it's worth it. But at the moment, Borussia Dortmund are playing hardball, and you can understand that because his release clause doesn't kick in until 2022. So if anybody wants him this year, they're going to have to pay top dollar.
Yeah, Don, no reason to suggest that Borussia Dortmund won't stick to their guns here. We saw him do it last summer with Jadon Sancho.
Exactly that, and they've done it many times before. They are a stubborn football club, and they get what they want. They do play hardball, probably one of the best negotiators out there in European football. And you're right, Jadon Sancho is a great comparison. United were so close to getting him, and I think in the end there was in and around sort of 10 million euros difference. And you thought Man United, the size of football club they were, they would just pay the 10 million and get the deal done, but they didn't. So now who's going to be in the race for Sancho in a pandemic? I'm sort of struggling to figure out who's going to splash that sort of cash. I think if someone's going to take Haaland for that amount of money, 180 million pound, I think they might have to be creative. You look at Chelsea, they've got a number of football players and a huge squad that they could try and trim, if you like, and offer players in part exchange. So I don't think anyone's going to go wallop, there's 180 million pound. I think if someone is going to take him, you will see a couple of swap deals and a lot of money exchanged because, as Ian said, the kid is just an absolute game changer.
Robert, what about the players' perspective here? What do we think Erling Haaland will think of all this, especially considering Borussia Dortmund, no guarantee right now to even make Champions League next season?
He'll probably be disappointed that if they don't get the Champions League, it'll be a struggle for him to go. And £180 million, I don't think he will go. But I don't think it'll do him any harm. You know, Champions League isn't everything. He's a top-class player, brilliant player, and another season at Dortmund, just improving his game. And when he can go at £75 million, he can then have the pick of the clubs he wants to go to. Because I'm sure every club in Europe will want him. He's an outstanding player. As Darkie said, he's devastating. He's one of the best strikers you're going to see for quite some while.
Shaka, you agree with Robbo? Haaland doesn't need Champions League right now to continue his development?
Not right now. Not at the age that he is, not what we've seen from him so far. One season without Champions League, I don't think dents anyone's interest in him in a year's time, if that's the case. Come 2022, all the clubs that are being linked with Erling Haaland right now will be linked with him yet again, especially at that reduced price.
We saw the impact it had on Jadon Sancho when he got his head turned, didn't make the move to Manchester United. What do you suppose the impact would be on Haaland?
It's always difficult to see what something like this, a move like this falling through for somebody as young as Jadon Sancho was then, Erling Haaland is now, how it affects them. As we said, I have absolutely no reason to think that it affects Erling Haaland in the slightest way. We saw that in his arrival in German football to a lot of fanfare, despite interest from other clubs. He hit the ground running, continues to break records, and continues to keep everybody interested. Even if things don't work out for him this time around, well, if he doesn't move this year, I see no reason why he doesn't continue scoring goals just as he's done for Borussia Dortmund. And as I say, we have this discussion again in 12 months' time. Remember a few years ago, Lewandowski in leaving Borussia Dortmund, even with the link with Bayern Munich, his contract was running out. Dortmund played hardball. As a matter of fact, Dortmund actually offered and did pay him more in his final year, knowing that he's leaving on a free transfer. So they know what they're doing in terms of keeping players happy. They've been down this road many times before. I don't see why it's going to be any different.
Don, we know how much the Champions League means to Erling Haaland. We also seen the frustration last weekend as he stormed off the field. What kind of impact do you think it would have on Haaland to have to stay at Dortmund if they don't make the Champions League?
Yeah, it's a tricky one without knowing his character. I believe, you know, the people behind the scenes are not rushing him to the very top. I think they're taking strategic steps to try and ease him into different levels of football. I think it's you know, it's imminent. It's a matter of time. It's inevitable before we see Erling Haaland at one of the major players in Europe, whether that's Barcelona, Real Madrid, United, someone of that ilk. But I think the people that look after him wouldn't actually mind him staying at Dortmund and learning his trade and, you know, improving as a player, improving on his technical ability. When you watch him, he's a powerhouse. He's got little things to work on. There's not many flaws in his game, but he's going to get better with experience. So it wouldn't be the end of the world. I just look at him the way, you know, I wouldn't say storming off the pitch, but he's not happy. It's almost like he's very close to becoming too big for Dortmund. You know, he's scoring goals. The team's drawing games. They're not the Champions League. They were contending from the Bundesliga. They now fell away. I wonder if the player then gets a little bit, I wonder if he gets a little bit frustrated in where he wants to be in his personal challenges. Because if he does, and it is £180 million, that's an awful lot of money. And teams around Europe now will be looking at the very top-end strikers and they'll be thinking, right, can we get Kylian Mbappe, £180 million? That's going to be in and around the figure. That's going to be unlikely. Same as Haaland. There's other players like Lukaku and Harry Kane that, in my opinion, wouldn't cost £180 million. So the top-end managers across Europe will have all these Galactico strikers right across their table analysing every single one and the transfer fees and the wages involved. And it's going to be a pretty hectic summer to see where they end up.
Ian, a year without Champions League football for Erling Haaland, can you imagine it?
I can't really, actually. I think they're very wise words from the ex-professional footballers on our panel tonight. Yeah, in an ideal world, he would learn his trade for another year, but he is very, very special. I think he's got 10 goals in 6 matches in the Champions League this season. I think he and his agent will want him in the Champions League. I think they will get very impatient with Dortmund if they don't make it into that competition next season. And it'll be one of those transfer sagas we're going to read about all through the summer. I'd watch Chelsea in all this because Chelsea, I think, are the side who need to bridge a gap, aren't they, between themselves and Manchester City. And I think in Abramovich, they've got a guy who might just say, if this is what it takes, let's do it.
Robert, what do you think Haaland's reaction? Go ahead. Don?
Sorry, Seb. It wouldn't surprise me, like Ian said. That's why I mentioned Chelsea at the top of the show. It wouldn't surprise me if Chelsea then threw in someone like Timo Werner and said, well, there's 50 million off the 180 straight away without even thinking, without even trying.
Robbo, Haaland to Chelsea, is that the fit?
It could be the fit, but I think it'd be better at Manchester City because Manchester City, I think, need a centre forward now. Jesus, I don't think, has ever been quite up to it. Aguero's on his way out, I would imagine. And Haaland is that sort of strike. He's going to run in behind. His link-up play will be better. He can score goals in the air as well. He's a magnificent footballer, but I still don't think he has to go this year. And at the moment, nobody's actually come in for him. When Xhaka was saying a move could break down, there is no move for him yet.
Xhaka, what do you think? Yes or no? Will he be there next season?
I still think no. And between the two English clubs that we're talking about, Chelsea and Manchester City, I'm with Robbo in that I think it's a better fit for Manchester City, a greater need. My huge concern in all of this is what football clubs have had to endure for the last 12 months. And I think clubs are hurting a lot more than they are letting on with no fans in the stadium, that loss of revenue. How do you now justify spending £180 million on one player? Chelsea themselves, 2 years ago, transfer ban didn't spend anything. Last year, spent somewhere around £200 million on players. And all of a sudden, you're going to do that again on the one. I just don't see how the numbers add up, given the losses in revenue that every single club across Europe has had to endure.
Speaking of that, folks should download the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. Plenty of discussion there on what this summer's transfer window could look like.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
And of course, Bundesliga returns to ESPN Plus the weekend of April 3rd. The aforementioned big match for Borussia Dortmund as they face Eintracht Frankfurt. Here's Manchester United's well-documented record in cup competitions under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Of course, United yet to win a trophy since Ole took over in late 2019. ESPN's Rob Dawson reporting that United are still committed to giving him a new contract. He's got 1 year left on the current deal, and that is with or without trophies in what's left of this season. All right, Chaka, straight up, good idea or bad idea for Manchester United to extend Ole?
Listen, I'm middle of the road on this one. I still don't think that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the manager that leads Manchester United to significant silverware. But I do feel that there has been some progress under Ole's watch. I also, and without knowing the terms of this deal that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been offered, I feel that he is either a cheap option, or if the time comes to replace him, it doesn't get overly expensive to replace him. So I think that's a concern. The other thing that's kind of muddying my own judgment on this is, you question who can come in and make this squad a title contending squad, a team that really challenges for significant honours. But then you look at Tommy Tuchel and what he's done at Chelsea and how quick that turnaround has been. And that for me is the decision that Manchester United's board has to make. Can you get somebody to come in and do as Tuchel did with Chelsea with this United squad? Or is it just a case of that this United squad simply isn't good enough, regardless of who's on the sidelines? So at least trust it to someone who knows the club to start putting the pieces in place, even if he can't complete the puzzle, so to speak.
Stuart, Don, and Ian still with us here on ESPN FC. Rob, I'll start with you. Do you agree with Shaka?
I agree to a certain degree with Shaka. Now, they missed their opportunity. There aren't too many people that could come in now and improve Manchester United, but they had a chance a little while ago when Pochettino was sacked from Spurs and it was out of work for quite a while. And if he wanted a young manager that has proven himself not to win trophies, but to make a team like Spurs, who were middle of the road, make it into a much better team and get them into the Champions League final, there was a manager, in my view, that would have taken Manchester United to the next level. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I don't think he's a good coach. He seems to be a great man manager, because when they lose games, they don't lose everything. He seems to be able to get them back on side again. Then they find good results when he's under a bit of pressure. So I think he's a good man manager. He's not a good coach, and he should have been replaced maybe 6 months ago, and Pochettino should have come in then, because he's a top-class manager and he's a top-class coach. And I'm sure he'll prove that at PSG. That's the decision they should have made. Now it's too late. I think they have to stick with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer for another year or two.
Don, you can't argue that he's stabilised the club. Is now the time then for an upgrade at Manchester United?
An upgrade in terms of replacing him? I don't think so. I think he's done a decent job. The job that he's trying to do, or what he should be doing, is trying to win silverware. And I found a strange statement that he came out with about a week, 10 days ago, when he said, trophies are just for egos. I thought that was a real strange statement that he made. United, if you're a Man United player, fan, manager, that's the whole remit of your job, is to win trophies. You're one of the biggest clubs in the world. Don't give your players an excuse to lose quarterfinals, semi-finals, finals. He rested players in the Premier League against Sheffield United, costly. He rested players against Besiktas in the Champions League, costly. Done exactly the same against Leicester, you know, in the FA Cup, costly. Lost all three games. At some point, he's got to start being a ruthless manager. I think what he is, Ollie, I think he's a very good manager, as Stewie said. I think he knows his job. He's got a fantastic young players, a group of young players to work with. He's getting the best out of them, but he's got to instill a winning mentality. I look at Man United and I think they're just lacking that. Premier League's going to be difficult. You know, Man City are absolutely light years ahead of them. So in essence, like Shaka, I'm a little bit confused why United may be rushing to give him a new deal, but I think he's the man for the job at the moment.
Ian, surely you talked to a lot of Manchester United fans. Does this match their ambitions for the club to keep Ole?
Well, the big picture, I think, with Manchester United is they've been looking for another Sir Alex Ferguson. Well, there probably isn't another Sir Alex Ferguson, though I think Robbo's point about Pochettino is a good one. They could have got him. I think they just happened to think, having tried Mourinho and Van Gaal and before that David Moyes, that Solskjaer gets the club, he understands what the club is, the players kind of respond to him. I think the situation is he a great manager? No. Is he a good manager? And is he taking the club in the right direction? Probably. But I think he's wrong to talk about the fans not wanting trophies and it being an ego thing. That's not right at all. I think they've got to win the Europa League. They're favourites to do it. They've got a kind draw. They should be going for that hell for leather. If they do that and finish second in the Premier League, that isn't what the old Manchester United were about. But I think when you've got a team as good as Manchester City dominating everything in England, it's about as good as they could do at the moment. So I kind of get what they're doing here is a continuity decision.
Shaka, the board may not turn on Ole if he doesn't win a trophy. How long do you think the fans will last?
I'm not sure that they go more than next season without significant civil war, or at least challenging in a manner that you know, as Don points out, I think City are light years ahead of probably everybody else in the Premier League right now, and it takes some catching them. But just to kind of go out with a whimper, as you've seen Manchester United do far too often of late, I don't think satisfies the Manchester United fans. As much as you accept that City are a better club and have a better manager than you right now, this kind of, well, you know, we're second best in our own city now, you know, we're now the noisy neighbours, I don't think sits well with them at all. At least give the fans something to rally around, to be proud of.
All right, we'll leave this there for now. A reminder, don't miss today's edition of Extra Time. Everybody from this segment, with the exception of Don. You know, sometimes you got to make some tough decisions. And today it was Don. Juventus sitting third in Serie A during the international window. Just 2 points ahead of fifth place Napoli. Of course, Alessandro Del Piero has recently joined the ESPN FC family. Here's what he had to say about his former club's top four chances.
There is a possibility. I mean, for what we saw till now, they have all the quality to win the league. But, you know, sometimes you play some season that you get a lot of problems at the same time and you don't find what is the solution shortly. They need to recover one game against Napoli. But Napoli is running quite well, and they run for the fourth spot on the Champions League as well. So that kind of motivation sometimes brings you to play hard, harder than what you think, or to make you feel, well, I have to be worried about something. So let's see how the team, Pirlo, the players, and the club react on that. But they need to have a look, seriously, from my point of view.
All right, Robbo, what do you make of what Alessandro Del Piero says and the chances Juve could miss out on Champions League football?
Well, if you look at the table and look at the form that Napoli have been in recent games, and Atalanta are creeping up on them as well, and Juventus losing to Benevento, you can understand exactly what he's saying. But 2 weeks ago, I was saying there's only one team to challenge Inter, and that was Juventus. So I still think they've got a good enough set of players. They've still got a good enough side to be second in the table. I still think they'll be in that position come the end of the season. I don't think they'll be out the Champions League spots. I think they've got good enough players. I'm not sure about the coach, but I think they're good enough overall to be in second spot come the end of the season.
Shaka, they lost to Benevento last week. They've gone out of the Champions League. What do you make of it?
Listen, I understand exactly what Del Piero is saying. He made the point that without Champions League football, he expects Atalanta, who of course are now even on points with Juventus, albeit playing a game more, to be even more fearsome. Listen, Juventus themselves without Champions League football, can they step it up? And the truth is, I think that loss at home to Benevento is the shot in the arm that Juventus needed. The wake-up call that maybe some of their football has been crying out for, because they've not been playing particularly well, but somehow crafting results. Juventus, before that loss against Benevento, have only lost it at home to Fiorentina and Roma. And they still have to entertain Napoli, Milan and Inter in Turin. I think that is the deciding factor with those teams coming to them, that their own destiny is pretty much in their own hands. They still have to go to Atalanta, but those three coming to Turin, I think, decides Juventus's feet, which is what you want.
Bottom line, I mean, we're talking about them maybe making the top four, Robert. We're not talking about getting hardware here, and that's why they brought Cristiano Ronaldo into Juventus. We talked about this on Wednesday's show. Are we finally at the point now where we can say Ronaldo to Juve was a mistake?
I'm not sure it was a mistake because he scored lots of goals and they've won the title a couple of times. But I think it was difficult for Andrea Pirlo coming in because a new coach coming in wants to play his own formation. He's probably got in his mind how he wants to play. And people laughed at me when I said Ronaldo will be his biggest problem. But I think that's come to the fore because Pirlo wants to play his system. Ronaldo wants to play where he wants to play. And there's been times in games when they've struggled and you want, and Pirlo's wanted Ronaldo to play up front with Morata. And Ronaldo's gone everywhere else but play up front. And then when he's put him slightly wider, where does Ronaldo go? He'll go on the other wing or go and play at centre forward or drop into midfield. And that's the problem when you've got a star player who you can never criticise. Mm. And as a pundit, you can never criticise him because he's got so many fans.
Shaka, interesting what Robbo mentions there. We were talking about it before the show. Mm. What do you think Pirlo actually wants? To keep the leading scorer in the league or to rebuild on his own? Because there's value to both, right?
I think Pirlo's instructions or remit is confusing. Mm. Because you bring Cristiano Ronaldo in to win the Champions League. But then two managers later, you bring Andrea Pirlo in for what is effectively a rebuild. Mm. The two don't necessarily go hand in hand. Especially when, as Robbo points out, you're talking about a player like Cristiano Ronaldo with the goal return that he provides, but at the same time, given his age, his need to play a certain role, the fact that we're arguably talking about one of the best footballers of a generation who's going to do as he thinks right, regardless of what a new coach, an inexperienced coach such as Andrea Pirlo is. So it becomes a really difficult task. How do you balance the expectation of your brightest star, the return of your brightest star, and this rebuild that apparently the board wants you to be structured when, again, that brightest star was brought to win the Champions League?
Robbo, Pavel Nedvedev has come out and said that Cristiano Ronaldo is untouchable, that he won't be moving this summer. Is that the right decision for Juventus' future?
I think Pavel Nedved's just saying what he thinks the fans would want to hear, what he thinks the press would want to hear. I'm not so sure. I think the best thing for Juventus now would be for Ronaldo to go, for Andrea Pirlo, if he stays at the club, to be able to build the club in the way he wants to. Some of the young players can then develop more. I think we'll see more structure to their side. And I think the best thing for everybody would be if Ronaldo left and went somewhere else.
The challenge, though, is with this rebuild, sometimes you want that experience in your dressing room. Mm-hmm. And that makes the balancing act all the more difficult for Juventus and Pirlo.
Of course, Serie A returns on Saturday, April 3rd. All the games there on Saturday that weekend, all on ESPN+, with the exception of Bologna Inter Milan. That's on ESPN2 on Saturday afternoon. And of course, to get you ready for all that, download the latest edition of the Serie Awesome podcast. Mina and Nikki joined by Mark Donaldson.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Among the many things that we can never agree on this show, the actual definition of what is a favorite. The odds here define England as the favorites to win the European Championships this summer. Robbo, Don, and Ian still with us. Of course, we've been watching a lot of World Cup qualifiers of late. Robbo, let's start with you. Who's looking good? Who is your favorite right now for the European Championships?
Well, I wouldn't say they're favourites, but I've been watching a lot of Italy, and over the course of the last couple of years, they've been the most consistent side. I mean, they've done brilliantly under Mancini. They got a good win against Northern Ireland. They played some good football in the first half. They've got a settled squad. They know exactly how they're trying to play. Mancini plays with this four, it's almost a three-and-a-half-man defence, and one of the wing-backs or one of the full-backs gets forward. They've got Immobile with a bit of pace up front. They're a very good side at the moment. They've still got Bonucci playing and Chiellini. They were good against Northern Ireland. They caused themselves one or two problems when they tried to play out from the back in the second half. But they're the side that have had the best record in recent times. So Italy are certainly dark horses.
Ian, 5-1 for England. You having it?
I don't think England should be favourites. And I think that price is based on the fact that the semi-finals and the finals are at Wembley and England will play all their group games at Wembley. So home advantage means something. Are they the best team in Europe? No, I don't think so. A lot of attacking talent and a lot of promising young players coming through. But I think it's a very, very open tournament. Any number of teams could win it. I think you've got to say France really should be the favourites, shouldn't they? World champions, and they've still got most of that team. Maybe a question mark whether Giroud can do it for another tournament for them. I like Portugal. I think they've got a better team now than the one that won it 4 years ago, but they're in that tough group with France and Germany. And, you know, even teams like Turkey, we saw the other night, knocking four goals past the Netherlands. So every game's going to be competitive. I think it's going to be a super watch.
Yeah, sitting on the fence, Ian Dodd. Don, what about you? Why not England? Don't they have the talent to do it?
My goodness me, Sebi. Here we go again. Every 2 years, England win a game, they beat San Marino 5-0, then all of a sudden, somehow the bookies rank England favourites ahead of the world champions Belgium, ahead of the ranked number one team in the world, ahead of France. Germany, I think, are dark horses as well, probably got one of the best midfields, I think, in Europe. You think of Joshua Kimmich and Gundogan, Goretzka. If they can get Timo Werner, Sané, Havertz, firing, they've got a chance. I think I totally agree with Robbo, by the way, on Italy. They look a tremendous team and got some goals all over the pitch in likes of Locatelli and Berardi, Chiesa, Immobile. So I think, like Ian said as well, I think what it is going to be, it's going to be a super watch and anyone can beat anyone. It's going to be fascinating.
Just going back to your point, sorry, Don, just going back to your point, you know, and I agree with you, Germany have got a very good midfield and a good side. It was only two matches ago that they lost 6-0 to Spain. So that shows how inconsistent teams have been at the moment. The same with Spain. I've seen them play really well on other occasions. They've looked lacklustre. I think I saw them play away from home in Ukraine and they lost the game by a couple of goals to nil where they were really poor. So there's not really one consistent side at the moment apart from Italy.
And England lost at home to Denmark, about 1-0 a couple of games ago. So it's, as you say, who's a banker?
Robbo, in your mind, what's holding England back from being considered a favourite?
I don't think, in my view, the manager or the coach is good against, he talks brilliantly to the press, Gareth Southgate. He's been a brilliant man manager of the players, I think. He's done so well getting the press on side, which a lot of England managers haven't done. They've given him a lot of good press. But I don't think he's a top-class coach. We've seen that in the very big games. We saw that in the semi-final of the World Cup when it was obvious that they had to change the system and they didn't. I think he's not a particularly good coach and he will be found out in one of the big games. And that's why, for me, England won't win the European Championships.
Shaka, do you want to pick one team or, like the guys, do you want to literally name all of Europe?
I'll pick one team, but as Don mentioned them, Belgium, number one ranked team in world football right now. Guys talk about inconsistency of so many. France as well beat Ukraine 7 in October, draw with them 1-1 in World Cup qualifying a few days ago. For Belgium, I think Roberto Martinez has a very balanced squad, an aging back three, but they're experienced and know what they're doing. I felt at times going into major tournaments, it was the striking department that let or would let Belgium down. I think coming into this tournament, you've got Romelu Lukaku in the best form of his career. I think that takes them one step further, even though they can't rely on the talents of Eden Hazard as they had done in the past. I just feel that this squad right now is as good as it's ever been for as long as we've been talking about Belgium as number one. And I'm not sure how long this squad stays together, given how much plaudits they've gotten over recent years and not delivered on it. I think this is their last chance.
Reminder then, if you ever miss a version of the show, you can always download the audio version over on the website, podcasts available daily. All right then, Shaka, time to turn our attention to the weekend's World Cup qualifiers. We still have Ian, Robbo, and Don still with us. Get a sense of what the boys are watching. Robbo, it says you want to watch Spain against Georgia. Spain are going to crush Georgia. Why are we going to watch this?
Well, I'm not watching it because I think it's going to be a great game. I'm going to watch it because I've covered Spain quite a bit over the last few months. And I'm interested to see where they're going with their team. Luis Enrique has tried different formations. He's tried a different style of football. We've seen Spanish sides struggle in Europe this season. We've seen that they've been playing at too slow a tempo. And that's been the case with the Spanish side at times. Then you see them play a little bit more forward thinking. And they've played with two wide players that have gone past people. And I'm thinking, yeah, that looks much, much better. There's more penetration to their play. And then they get a poor result against Greece. So I'm just interested to see where Luis Enrique is taking the Spanish side. Because on their day, they can still be a great team.
Ian, you've gone Czech Republic and Belgium. Why?
I'm just interested to see Belgium again. I think they had a pretty easy ride against Wales the other night, although Wales scored a great goal at the start of the game. Belgium are highly touted. We keep getting told they're the best team in the world. Well, they're the best team in the world on the FIFA rankings, and there'll be a fair amount of argument about that. But so they're playing the Czech Republic. I remember the Czech Republic giving England a hard time and beating England not so long ago. And they've got that West Ham pair, among others. Thomas Soucek, he got a hat-trick against Estonia the other night. Sofal, the right back, who kept Jack Grealish quiet in a game I saw. So I quite like the look of the Czech Republic. And I think Belgium going there, that's a bit more of a meaningful test. We might find out a little bit more about that defence of theirs.
Don, we know you're pretty busy on weekends between the bike rides and giving your money away to strangers. What are you making time for?
I'll be watching Israel versus Scotland behind the sofa, probably, because Scotland had a great result against Austria. Should have beat them, by the way. We had a Stonewall penalty that was not given. We should have won that game 3-2. But I think we've come a long way under Steve Clark. I think the team's playing well. He's found a partnership, I think, in Shea Adams and John McGinn, who played up front in the second half, and they looked sensational together. So they're playing good football. It's just, this is the type of result where you've seen over the years Scotland lose against the likes of Kazakhstan or Israel. I have trouble beating the likes of San Marino. So this is one where the second game of the campaign, good result against Austria. Scotland have got to win this game, but it'll be a nervy watch because it always is watching these type of fixtures.
Don's watching Scotland. Chuck, are you watching Trinidad?
Absolutely, I'm watching Trinidad and Tobago. Away to Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And listen, for very selfish reasons, unashamedly, given the 2019 that we had, we won one football game against...
Who was that against?
Against Anguilla, who at the time were bottom of the FIFA rankings. And because of the corona pandemic, played absolutely no football in 2020. Started off 2021 with that 7-0 defeat against the US. And for a host of reasons, off-the-field reasons, I thought... Yesterday's game against Guyana was as big for a coach and administration as we've had for some time. We came through flying colours, I'm happy to report. And now on to Puerto Rico. That's the only place that any football matters in the world this weekend.
You heard it here first on ESPN FC. Here's a look at Saturday's UEFA World Cup qualifiers. Of course, you can see across the ESPN family of networks. Worth noting the doubleheader on TV, Norway-Turkey first, then Czech Republic-Belgium on Saturday afternoon.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
The international break does not mean a break for the hardest working man at ESPN FC. Shaka Hislop's power rankings are back. Shaka, what have you done?
It speaks for itself, Sebi. The top seven have all won. They just continue rolling along. PSG win away to Lyon. Lille lose, so PSG are back top in France. Continue in the Champions League. Rangers are back in after the team that knocked them out of the Europa League was omitted for reasons that are far too serious for this segment. Napoli won five of their last six, including beating Milan and Roma in their last two, to all of a sudden be 2 points back of Juventus. That's deserving of being in at number 10. Oh. And nobody can argue with that.
I think we know some
nobody.
Guys who might be able to
nobody,
argue.
Nobody, Sebi. Nobody.
Don, you okay with it?
Not really, Seb. I mean, I must be on the moon that Shaq has just said. Rangers are back in. The last time I was on this show, Rangers were in fifth and they've just won their 55th title. They're going for invincibles this season. And they're at ninth, ahead of... just behind PSG, by the way, who lost against Nantes the other week.
Bravo.
Yeah. I've just had Pep Guardiola on the phone. He says, we've won 25 out of 26. How are we not number one in Shaka Hislop's rankings?
I'll tell you who's very happy with him. Antonio Conte. His team don't play at the weekend and they stay in at number two. I'm not quite sure how that happened.
Shaka?
Bit like Shaka. When he didn't play, he became a better player when he was injured.
Ooh, wow. Bravo off the top rope with 30 seconds left in the show.
I'm not sure how I respond to that. That's just totally uncalled for, Mr. Robson.
Look at that. All right,
I stand by my algorithm.
You do,
Debbie?
You do.
It's tried. Algorithm. It's tested.
Oh, that's harsh.
Silicon Valley. Stamped all over that. I don't argue with it. Let's move on.
Napoli, fifth in Italy, 10th in the world.
Yes, sir.
That's it for this edition of ESPN FC. Mm-hmm. See you next time. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this Friday edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. Shaka Hislop, Sebastian Salazar, Stuart Robson, Ian Dark. Shame we had to get rid of Don Hutchison. Shaka, he just wouldn't stop complaining about your power rankings.
Well, as good excuse as any to get rid of Don.
First question for Ian. Ian, can you consider saying, hey there, everybody, as your opening line when you call your next match? When is that next match?
For what reason would I be doing that?
Oh, because you want to be more
I'll
like
do it
me.
Now, if it pleases everybody. Hey there, everybody.
Dare I say, he did it better than I did. He added that Ian Dark gravitas that so lacks from my, what I'm told is a childish voice.
We're all going crazy. I know it now.
Yep, yep. Shaka, do you think David De Gea is already past his best, although he's only 30?
I don't think he'll get back to being as good as he was for Manchester United. That
he's not going to be like world elite anymore, you're saying?
Correct. At one point, I felt David De Gea was maybe not the best goalkeeper in the world, just behind Manuel Neuer. I don't think he gets anywhere close to that kind of acclaim again.
It's strange, right? Because it's not like a physical thing with him. It seems more like his...
About a year after that Real Madrid move fell through, it just kind of came off the rails. And he's never really... He's improved. He got better, but not back to where he was before things just kind of started coming apart.
Ian, what do you make of the young talents that the United States has coming through? Do you think we're going to be having another go-go USA moment in the future?
Well, let's hope so, because there's been two or three years of doldrums, and it's good to see that it goes in cycles and there is an exciting new generation of players coming through now. And it will be very interesting to see how they go in the World Cup qualifiers and hopefully at the World Cup itself. So I'm hopeful that the tide has turned.
You know what's the most exciting thing about these young players coming through?
What
with the US hosting the 2026 World Cup, talk will inevitably turn to can the US win it?
Yep.
And I guarantee Craig will self-combust.
I hope he does it on Football America. We're going to bring him on.
Craig's reaction to all of that will be absolutely classic. Yep. It will be 4 years of Don't Miss TV.
Yeah, Burley's boiling.
Oh, place. Goodness, that would be so show. Good. That would be so good.
Robbo, who's your favorite to win Hammer of the Year this year?
Hammer of the Year. I would go with, at the moment, Souček. I think he's been outstanding for them. He's come in, he's scored goals, he's been good in midfield defensively. He's not a flashy player, but he's effective. Him and Rice have been excellent in midfield. So I would go with Souček. He's been outstanding most weeks.
Xhaka, you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Lingard's coming in January has been outstanding, but ultimately it's half a season. Souček has been outstanding all season long. He wins it for me.
All right, Ian.
And Declan Rice.
That's a good shout, Ian. Do you think football would be okay without the offside rule? Ian, of course, we heard this suggested by Marco van Basten this week.
No, I think it's a crazy idea. And the answer in one word is no, it's not a good idea.
What do you think, Robbo?
Well, in hockey, field hockey, which I'll just remind you, they said it would be a mad idea in field hockey to get rid of offside. And hockey has been a much better game because there is no offside. And that's, I know a lot of hockey umpires that said it took all the sort of silly rules out of it. Players don't goal hang, they still go back into good positions. The defenders defend normally. It didn't ruin the game at all. In fact, it made it better. So I could see why you would take the offside law out.
Okay, Stuart Robson joining the chorus along with Marco van Basten. Xhaka? As a goalie, right?
I'll be honest, on the one hand, I don't necessarily want to agree with anything that Marco van Basten says for reasons of having shared an IFB panel with him. That being said, I can see it making sense, but at the same time, I don't think IFAB goes for that at all. It's just too far a departure from the traditional rules in the game.
What happened in that panel, Xhaka?
Marco van Basten was the FIFA representative.
Okay.
And how... You know, when you're at the end of a Zoom meeting, there's always somebody who has three or four questions to ask.
Yeah, there's also that kid in school that just like,
always has to put his hand up and ask those questions when everybody's ready to go home. Mm-hmm. That's Marco van Basten.
Typical Xhaka. All he wants to be is lazy. He doesn't want to do the hard work. You should have stayed there and answered these questions.
Xhaka.
Right. No, you just want to go home. If they were viable questions, I have no problem with it.
Wow. Marco van Basten, what's he ever done? Robbo, what changes does Serie A need to make to begin competing with other leagues in Europe again?
First of all, they need to make sure they produce better players at a young age. I've done a lot of under-17s, under-19 tournaments, under-20 tournaments, and at the moment, Italy aren't producing good enough players that are going to come into the team and be top-class players. The national side is doing OK at the moment. I think they've been very consistent. But that, when I look at the young players coming through at clubs, Bastoni's done well at Inter, Locatelli, who was a star at Milan, is now in the national team, but had to go away from Milan to Sassuolo. They're not producing good enough players. Until they do that, the Serie A league will be just below one or two of the others.
Ian, a commentary question here. Do you prefer to comment up in the press box or would you like it more like the NBA and be pitch level? You couldn't really call a game from pitch level, could you?
No, although I had to this season during the pandemic. I did an FA Cup tie at Stockport, used to be in the Football League, they're now a non-league team, playing West Ham, in fact. And they said, you're going to have to commentate from here. And we were probably about 6 inches above pitch level. So that wasn't easy. In pouring rain, mud everywhere, not particularly good floodlights. But I think we just about got away with it. But I'm not quite sure how.
Sevi, let me tell you, Ian Dark could commentate on a football game if he was behind the goal. He'd commentate on anything. Don't you worry about that and do it well.
We saw some of the COVID-19, the pandemic shutdown commentary from right in his own backyard as well. All right, we'll leave it there for this edition of Extra Time. Thanks to Robbo, thanks to Ian, thanks to Xhaka, and thanks to you for sending in the questions. The boys will be back tomorrow with yet another edition of ESPN FC. Enjoy.